Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. This is the Hagman Report. It is Wednesday, May 13th, 2020, and a lot of things to get into this show. I want to thank you for joining me. Thank you for your belief and your trust in this platform and me and the guests I bring on. I've got a great litany of guests this week. Today we're going to be talking, of course, addressing the constitutional aspects of things that are taking place today. I'm going to have with me this program, Dr. Richard Proctor. We're going to be talking about a lot of things that are taking place, a lot of things that we need to do, plus some background, some really important background to kind of set things up. So just, man, stay tuned. Tomorrow, Dr. Michael Lake is going to be joining me tomorrow evening. And then on Friday, As scheduled, Craig Sawyer is going to be joining me. We're going to be talking a lot about his new movie that is a documentary that's out, Contraland. I'm telling you, you've got to see it. Man, fantastic. Before I get started, folks, I want to tell you I've got a column that will be appearing in this issue, this upcoming issue of Wisconsin Christian News. If you haven't gotten it, here's what it looks like in a hard copy form. I'm telling you, it is the newspaper for Christians, Christian conservatives, and people who adhere or promote the Constitution of the United States and for all freedom-loving people, as a matter of fact. And it's through a biblical and scriptural perspective. That's Wisconsin Christian News. And when you go to Wisconsin Christian News, when you go to the website, the link will be in the program description box. Please support them. Not just by a subscription, but also by donating. Really, I don't know how, and I mean this, I don't know how Rob makes it with a low amount that he charges for the publication. It's a fantastic publication. By the way, the article that, it's going to be exclusive to Wisconsin Christian News, Lessons from a Kidnapping, real life story. So definitely get a hold of a copy of that. All right. Before I get started, I want to just tell you, I want to talk to you about Lightstream. I want to ask you something right now, because we've had time to kind of assess, analyze, at least a lot of us have, our high interest credit card rates. If you open your wallet and see a bunch of credit cards, have you checked the rates out? Are you paying more money in interest than you need to on your credit cards? Refinance your debt today with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. Look, we've done this. I know people who have done this with great success. You can quickly roll balances from multiple credit cards into one single monthly loan payment. Get a rate as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay, much lower than the national average credit card rate of over 19% APR. Plus, there are absolutely no fees. And the application process, it's very quick. It's easy. It's 100% online. If I can do it, you can too. I've got a lot of friends who actually have taken advantage of this with great success. In fact, one wrote to me, heard your podcast, and took advantage of the Lightstream offer, was able to save over $350 actually a month in credit card payments. The interest rate is incredibly lower. I cannot believe I waited so long. Thank you so much. Oh, P.S., the application process, that was simple, easy, and very quick. All right. How to take advantage of this, folks? Please do this right now. Apply today to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to Lightstream.com. That is Lightstream.com/Hagman. Lightstream.com/Hagman. I'm going to say it one more time. Lightstream.com/Hagman. I'm even going to spell it out for you. It's Lightstream.com/Hagman. That's Lightstream.com/Hagman. This is subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit Lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. You'll thank me later. Some of the headlines that I've been following today and some of the stories and news items I've been looking at. Folks, the walls are closing in on John Brennan specifically, and even to some extent, some of the people at the FBI, some extent, Comey, but Brennan specifically. John Brennan, it's been confirmed now that he had suppressed intelligence information saying that Russia wanted Hillary Clinton to win. And there's a lot of discussion, a lot of scuttlebutt going on right now about Brennan's activities. And even more so, the recent declassification of the Flynn documents or the release of the Flynn documents show the cabal of individuals involved in the Russiagate, hoax. And remember me talking about that, I think it was January 5th, 2017, email from Susan Rice to Susan Rice. We did everything by the book. Remember that? She was involved in a meeting that, at the end of Obama's term, last term, along with, Comey and Rice, Comey and others, and, saying that we did everything by the book as if, well, that was a big CYA thing. Well, I'm telling you right now, there is a lot of, they're under a microscope right now. And I do see finally a light at the end of the tunnel. And it's not an oncoming train. I do believe that we are going to see some level of justice. Will it be at that Brennan level? I don't know. Will it be at the Comey level? I don't know. But I can assure you that I can see some of the more lower level foot soldiers, I suppose, in the FBI and perhaps maybe the Department of Justice, Maine Justice, maybe with a Central Intelligence Agency, perhaps. I can see some indictments being made. I'm just saying that because this goes right back to Obama. This is Obamagate. And like I said yesterday, Obamagate, hashtag Obamagate, was trending on Twitter for, I don't know, maybe all of 3 minutes. Twitter says we can't have that. I'm telling you, the role that social networking is playing right now in censoring the truth is absolutely stunning. All right. The one good piece of information, the Trump-backed candidate won very big in a Wisconsin special election. This also took place in Florida. Republicans sweep congressional special elections, reclaiming, I think it's the 25th district in California. Interesting. Is this does this pretend of things coming in November? I don't know. But Whitaker, getting back to what I was talking about earlier, Whitaker, the former Attorney General Matt Whitaker, said that the Flynn revelations are just the tip of the iceberg. Think about that. Well, that's exactly what they are. And again, going back to Biden and what we're seeing with Biden and what we saw with that whole, again, the cabal of, in my view, traitors and people involved in un-American activity, including the media and especially CNN, Putin wanted Hillary to win. Brennan knew it. I took special, I don't know, pleasure? That's not the right word. I took special interest in a tweet sent by President Trump that talked about Morning Joe Scarborough. Did you see that? About talking about Lori Klozoutis. He did not mention her by name. It was the intern found in Scarborough's office when he was in Congress in Florida. Hmm? Did you see that? Saying it's a cold case. Maybe they should reopen that. And oh my goodness, people were talking about how Trump has lost it. And then that news, the press conference. When was that? Yesterday? When he walked out of the press conference after dressing down a Chinese apologist. It was, and people said, "Oh man, he's melting down. He's melting down." No, you know what that is? That's absolute disgust. At least this is what I would do. You know me. Look, I've got a very my level of tolerance. Eric the Tech can tell you it's growing less and less by the day. And I don't feel like I suffer fools very well or lightly. Show that office some respect. Can you imagine the questions being posed to President Trump? Those same questions were like in kind questions being posed to Obama. Oh, I don't think so. And of course, the major story that's still around. Fauci. Tucker Carlson yesterday said that nobody elected Fauci as dictator. I'm not going to play the video clip, but I just want you to read. I could put it in the program description box. You can find it online. But it pretty much is what it is. No one elected Fauci as dictator. Period. End of story. What we're seeing right now, based on everything I've been able to research, investigate, has been a long time in coming. Eric, I'm not sure if you can, if you don't, I'll tell you what, before you do that, before I was going to have you put up a couple of images, a couple of quotes from, world leaders in quotation marks in some cases, you know, some, money people and such, but we'll wait on that. We'll get, Dr. Richard Proctor's view on that. I was going through the Liberty series. Liberty, will it survive? If you go to provisinstitute.com, you can get yourself this series of books. It's written in multiple volumes, but it's got a lot of good information. It really allows me, even though I consider myself a pretty intelligent guy, the information contained in here is kind of it provides the word, the verbal and visual mosaic to tell you how we got where we are today. And names provides the news articles, the citations, not footnotes to citations, but the actual news articles themselves. Liberty Will Survive. Go to provisinstitute.com and you'll find a lot of great information in these books. Of course, the major book there that everyone should have is Saving the Constitution. If you don't have that book yet, please do yourself a big favor and get that book, Saving the Constitution by Richard Proctor. Get two. Get yourself one, give one to your pastor, get yourself one, give one to your sheriff, give one to your chief. I'm telling you, this book really explains the Constitution better than I've ever seen any book explain the Constitution. And the reason that's important is because you could have a copy of the Constitution and you could read it in the old English, the Victorian English language, or the, I shouldn't say Victorian, but the, you know, the old English languages in which it was written, or you can get this book and have it, have some clarifications, quite a few clarifications made. The reason, for example, for some of the punctuation, you know, commas are important, semicolons are important. It changes the meaning of things. And that book provides a very good instructive manual as to what the Constitution says, because it's coming into play today. So with that, Dr. Richard Proctor, how are you, sir?
Oh, very fine. I'm glad to be here today. Glad to be here.
Hey, thanks for hanging with me, your patience during that opening. I wanted to make sure I talked about both Liberty Series and saving the Constitution.
Well, you do a good job, and I appreciate it. You know, those commas are very important. When you look at Article 5, if you don't follow the commas, you'll miss what it says.
you know, punctuation, yeah, that could change the whole meaning of things. I absolutely agree. Yeah.
It was in Sprague versus United States, 1931. The Supreme Court wanted to decide what Appendix 5, Article 5 says, and they had to leave a comma out to make it work. And they did. They left the comma out of their decision to make it work how they wanted it to say.
Exactly. One little chip. Yep. Now you sent me something, and I found it very interesting. You know, we're looking at a country right now that is, depending on what state in which you live, depending on where you're at, you could be shut down, locked down, on quarantine, whatever, or at least you know, according to the governor, governors, or maybe county executives or county council or whatever, regardless. You could be told to say, hey, you know, you can't open your business. You got to stay home. And you sent me, what was it, 18 U.S.C. Section 242.
Yep. Article 18.
Okay.
Code.
Right.
Section 242. Exactly. It was Ted White in Hawaii that discovered this for me, and I appreciate his help.
Okay. And Eric, I sent a link, and I'm not sure if you have it ready, if you can put it on the screen for everyone to see. There it is right there, United States Department of Justice. And what this is deprivation of rights under the color of law, which is Section 242 of Title 18. It makes it a crime for a person acting under the color of any law to willfully deprive a person of a right or privilege protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States. I don't see any ambiguity in that. Dr. Proctor, what say you?
I say that this particular statute gives us the opportunity to take governors, policemen, anybody that's serving in a purpose in a authoritarian place that denies us our rights to court and win. This is a very specific law. Very specific law. Now, I had a little trouble with the term color of law. What did color of law mean? So I went, I pulled out Black's Law Dictionary, and I pulled out another dictionary talking about what is the color of law. And the color of law is the appearance of an act being performed based upon legal right or enforcement of statute, when in reality, no such right exists. For example, when they tell you you can't go to work or you can't open your business, they are violating your rights, your personal rights, and they're saying that they have the authority to violate it because the governor said this or the governor said that or somebody did. That's color of law. They have no right to violate your rights. That's the appearance of an act being performed based upon a legal right, which does not exist in reality. No right exists. So they talk about mostly here. Go ahead.
Yeah, they made this up out of thin air. Is what happened.
Yes.
And without the authority. I was going to say power, but without the authority to do so, just made it up. Hey, you know what? I'm the governor. I'm the county executive. I'm whoever, and we're gonna for the good of the people, for the safety of the people. We're going to make sure everyone stays at home and under their beds, and we can't have, you know. So, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, this section, I'm going to read an item here. Section 242 of Title 18 makes it a crime for a person acting under color of any law to willfully deprive a person of a right or privilege established by the Declaration of Independence and protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States. And Title Title 18, Section 242, is a law of the United States, and it's establishing a baseline, a foundation that the officers or authorities of the United States have no authority whatsoever, federal, state, local, none, have no authority whatsoever to deprive us of these rights. And if they do, Section 242 outlines the punishments that they will receive, which can go as far as death and life imprisonment. It's in the section. It's very, very clear. These guys are violating our rights against U.S. law. Notice down here, yep, right, the very line may be, whoops, there's something in the way there, may be sentenced to death. Mm. May be sentenced to death. But up in the top, you can see shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both, fines, imprisonment. So they have varying levels of how much violation was done. But the violation by itself is no less than the year or a fine. I shouldn't say no less than a year. It's no less than imprisonment and a fine. And if there's bodily results, bodily injury results, now, you know, they're talking about dangerous weapon and explosives, fire, shall be fined not more than 10 years or both. Now, what do you call bodily injury? In the case of this particular section, it's talking about bodily injury of my arm or my leg being burned or me or what. But there's another injury, personal injury, when you can't work and you lose your home. That's a personal injury, not bodily, but a personal injury. And that injury is significant. And if you lose your home based upon this, you have a recourse in this section. And now the attorneys have got to do it. I understand that. But they know how to read. So I went to Black's Law Dictionary to find out what the color of law is. Now, see, the Black's Law Dictionary is important because that's what the attorneys are supposed to use. And it, again, goes through several instances here saying the color of law is a law. Let me read. The color of law is the appearance or semblance without substance of legal right. That's in State versus Beecher. I don't know what year it was. Doesn't matter. It's in Wisconsin. But the point I mean is color of law means a semblance or presumption of authority sustaining the acts of a public officer, which is derived from his apparent title to the office or from other process that are in his hands. Anyway, guys, bottom line is, I have now a document here. If anybody wants it, just email me and I'll send it to you. It's well, 2+ pages. Goes beyond just the original page that Ted White did to get down to what color of law is, what it means in the legal standpoint, the attorney's book, what the attorneys think these things mean, not just what Webster's thinks it means. So that's an add-on to what's been said here. But any acts done under color of law, which means acts, a color, it's just a thought, an idea of law, includes anything that they do that is outside of their authority based on the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Guys, it's very clear. And it, people are losing their homes. They have recourse. They have recourse. And who gets punished? The governor does. The governor. If a policeman gets punished. These guys pretend like they're under the authority. They're under no authority. It's the color of law. It's a presumptive authority which does not exist. It's even beyond power. It's everything. It does not exist. And so, guys, think about these things. I really appreciate Ted White's help to put this thing together and get it organized so we could get it out to everybody. And I will send this treatise to anybody who asks.
Yeah, and thank you, Ted White. I appreciate that. Indeed, you know, this is something that I think that we have to go to and enforce ourselves. And the reason I say that, I don't know whether you saw this or not. This is being reported on Breitbart, or was reported earlier today on Breitbart. Gretchen Whitmer, the Michigan governor, Herr Fuhrer, or whatever.
Fuhrer.
Yeah, indeed. You know, this is so incredible. She targeted, and her administration targeted, a 77-year-old barber, his livelihood, stripped his operating license without a hearing. And now, this gentleman named Carl Mankey, M-A-N-K-E. He's 77 years old. He's been in business for a heck of a long time. Reopened his shop after he was turned down for unemployment. So, okay, now, amid the legal threats from Whitmer's administration, he said, what are they going to do to me? You know, give me a life in prison? I got one foot in the grave and the other on a banana peel. I don't care. So he reopened his business. And he says, you know, as long as I'm capable, I've got two hands, and I'm capable of cutting hair, that's my occupation, that's what I do, that's what I'm going to continue to do. Well, to close a business yesterday, the governor of Michigan, the Whitmer, Gretchen Fuhrer Whitmer administration, stripped Mange of his operating license. The Department of License and Regulatory Affairs suspended Carl's license. They did it without a hearing, without due process, and under the color of law.
That's it, under the color of law. Yes.
Now what are we going to do about it? See, this is not about safety of others. This is not about health. This is really about a tyrannical takeover and abuse of power.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. It's people in the background trying to get our rights, take over, destroy the United States of America. We could retitle the book Saving the Constitution to Saving the United States of America, or Saving Our Country. We could retitle it that. That's where we are today. If we don't begin to exercise the rights we have with force, I don't mean force, guns and stuff, I just mean protesting, peaceful stuff, the stuff that's authorized. If we don't begin to do something about it with that in that vein, we will lose our rights and our country. We've got to do something. Mm. Now, I got to mention something here, a little housekeeping.
Sure.
I'm getting a lot of people writing to me saying, I need to know about my book. Was it ordered? Was it sent? What's the status? That kind of thing. And they're writing within 7 to 10 days or whatever. Well, I did some checking. I did some checking on tracking numbers. And I have found falsified information in the tracking orders that are being sent out, tracking your package by the post office. I found items were on one date, said one thing, and the next day, I'm talking about May the 11th to May the 12th, that information was deleted and turned around and hidden to make it sound different. And they're pigeonholing books. I've got another one here. The book was pigeonholed. Let me just tell you where it was pigeonholed. It was pigeonholed in the Denver County Network Distribution Center. It arrived there Dallas, Texas Network Distribution Center, arrived on the 6th of May at 2:02 p.m., did not leave until the 10th at 9:43. It sat there. It's something that should move in 2 hours or just overnight, sat there for 3+ days. That's what's going on. That's why your books are being held up. They're not being held up because they weren't sent. They're being held up because the post office, I'm going to say it, is targeting my books. How can
Dr.
they do
Parker,
that?
I'll tell you what you need to do. You need to put the return address as Hillary Clinton in, I believe that. Look, I've seen the same thing happen here. All right. With incoming and outgoing. So I understand that. That's incredible though. You know, it really is. Can we hope that maybe somebody at the post office read it? Do you think? No,
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know, but the world we live in is not the world that we think we live in.
True.
Okay?
Yeah.
The world we live in is not the one we think we live in. And my return address is boldly put on every one, so they know exactly who it is. And if they see what is going on and they see this, they can target it and hold them back. So far, they've all been delivered, just not delivered on time.
Yep.
But the records have been falsified. I have records falsified, tracking data falsified between one day and the next.
You know, It saddens me to hear that. It really does because I believe it. I believe it because, again, I've seen it on this end, on both incoming and outgoing. But you know, people might say, well, that's just an excuse. Well, you know what? Think back at the Tea Parties that wanted to apply for or wanted to get tax exemption, a 501c3 status, and what they did at the IRS. So post office, it's a government service. Yeah, I can see that.
Yep. By the way, the reason, not the reason, but a reason that I'm bringing this up is, please give me more time. Every time you guys send something in that we have to track, takes time to do that. The next time away from sending the books out that you want me to send out. Give it more time. Have some patience. Nothing has been lost yet. Not one. Every one of these books are delivered. They're just delayed.
Yep.
So please be patient.
And I echo that as well. And I appreciate, and we appreciate everyone who's ordered books. And I know that you personally pack them.
I take care of them. I take care of this myself.
Yep.
I want to know this goes. I'm going to have to hire a team though. I've had days of 130 books. I'm going to have to hire a team to do it. I will, but at the moment I still do it myself. I want these books taken care of. So I take responsibility of it. It's a big job. It's a big job.
I know.
Don't use any time asking questions that maybe you really don't need to ask. Be patient. Be patient.
That's right. And you know, I don't, you don't email, I don't do this with my book. You don't email tracking numbers, do you? That'd be too much. That would be too much.
It's too much, but I do.
You do?
When someone writes me something down and says, I need to know the tracking number. I need to know that it's working. I need to know this. I'll find it and send the tracking number to them.
Wow.
And that's a little tough to do, folks.
Yeah.
So don't ask me to.
Yeah, please. Yeah, exactly.
But I can send more books out. In the time I'm spending to do that, I could send more books out. And I don't want to ignore anything anyone says either.
You know, you make a good point. And I got to tell you, this is the asymmetrical aspect, I believe, of the war in which we find ourselves, because there is this huge, I was talking to Craig Sawyer this morning, and Craig Sawyer is the guy behind Contraland, and we were talking about communications, whether it be via social networking or just communications in general. And to hear some of the things that are going on with him and how they're messing with him, you know, we're in occupied territory, aren't we? We're behind enemy lines, it seems.
Yes, we are. We're behind enemy lines trying to. We're the resistance. In the World War II, they call it the resistance, behind enemy lines, fighting against the tyranny. Well, that's what we're doing, fighting against the tyranny that does exist, not that might, that does exist.
That does exist. Well, and you heard it here in the bit of housekeeping by Dr. Proctor. If you ordered a book, hang loose, hang tough, because it's coming.
It's coming. I haven't missed one order yet. And I try to get them out within the day that I receive the orders. Sometimes there's too many, and sometimes I run out of books. I've run out of books now. I have almost 1,000 books now on printing, being printed by the guys who print.
That does my heart good. It makes me appreciate the fact that our audience, I like to think it's our audience, but I know it's more than that. You know, people are starting to wake up and they're starting to say, well, wait a minute. That we're so far from the Constitution, from what the Constitution said, that we need to kind of reinforce that knowledge base. And you've done such a great job. Of course, people are going to be flocking to you.
You know, you can't reinforce it if you don't know what it is. I mean, the color blue, you can't describe that to a dog. Well, he doesn't listen anyway. But the point I make is that if you don't know something exists, or something about something that exists, you cannot discuss it or enforce it. In other words, if you don't know what a pencil is, you can't make one, because you don't know it needs to be made. So if you don't know that you have 27 rights, or 31, depending how you do the Fourth Amendment, you have 27 rights. If you don't know those and you don't understand what they are, you don't have them. I'm sorry, guys. You don't have them if you don't know them. It's in the book. It's in the Constitution book, but it's scary. The Constitution book is scary. I know it's 8,000 words, but it's scary. It's written in small print. It's written in an uncomfortable way. I changed all that. Every word in the Constitution and the amendments is in the book, and then the explanation. It's not scary. It's easy to read. It's pitch 12. I mean, it's easy to read.
Amen.
I tried to make it. But you can't You cannot preserve a right you don't have, that you don't know about. If you don't know about it, you don't have it. And it's that simple.
You know, we discuss books here at the office, and I do with my wife at home, and she loves your book, loves the format of your book, and I'll just leave it at that. But she just loves the way it reads, and so anyone can really understand what the Constitution says. I was thinking today about talking about your Liberty series and about kind of going back in history, but we can go anywhere you want. But I guess my one big question right now is, seeing everything that we're seeing right now, your evaluation, your thought, your assessment, given your experience, your years of experience, your years of observations, are we ever going to save the Constitution? Are we ever going to save our republic? I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Well, are we ever going to save our republic? That means that somebody's got to do something. We cannot save this republic if we don't do something. It's very important. It's very important to get out and do things, but you can't use physical force. You've got to use peaceful assembly. You've got to use demonstrations of item. You've got to use things that do not hurt or injure anybody else in any way, but you get your point across, because you're not allowed. The First Amendment says peaceful demonstrations. It doesn't say demonstrations. It says peaceful.
But doctor, what happens?
You're not allowed.
I know, but what happens when that's taken away from us? And forgive me for interrupting, but that's right. We're granted the right for peaceful assembly. But what happens when they say, nope, because of this contagion, you can't assemble. We're not going to allow you to protest. So you lose that right. And in conjunction with that, they're taking away, many states are taking away our Second Amendment rights. So you say peaceful. I say,
well, I'm not going to say get a gun and go shoot somebody.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say get a knife and go slash. It's got to be peaceful, but it's got to be multiple people. It's got to be lots of people, not just one or two. And remember, we talked last week about the Marine in California that stood up and harangued the security service guys and embarrassed them and ashamed them, and they all left. They all left. Now, that's the goal. They all left. But nobody did anything. Nobody pulled any weapons. Nobody did anything. Nobody yelled. He just had a good bullhorn. He just told the story. And they all left. I watched 11 minutes showing, not when he started, but at a point where he started, till the security service was all gone. He did that.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah, and I'm not advocating violence. I was talking to Coach Dave Dobmeyer about this, and, you know, we were talking about the phrase civil disobedience, and he said, no, it's not civil disobedience. It's obedience to God, and I believe that to be the case.
That's true.
And if we don't stand up, and if we don't say no, and we don't do this together, or enough is enough, I think it's going to lead to blood in the streets. I really do, because when you're denied all of that, when you've got seemingly no recourse, at least in my view, people are going to lose it. When you've got nothing left to lose, people are going to lose it. And that's Gerald Celani says that too. But yeah, and I don't advocate violence.
Just a second. Going on with what Dave just said, I thought of something I want to mention. Then you carry on with where you're going. Okay?
Sure.
Have a nice day. Anyway, a gentleman brought some, I'll mention, James Horsell, one of the guys that has bought my book, okay, but hasn't received it, I might add. Okay? He was talking to me about it, and he said, he quoted from Chronicles 14 and 7, or 7 and 14. I think it's 7 and 14. He quoted from that and said, I'm going to paraphrase, if my people, those who are followers of me, don't repent, or no, rather he said it differently, when the people of my people repent and turn away from their iniquity, I will heal their land. Now that's Chronicles. That's in the Bible. I will heal their land. Now who are his people? That's the Christians. That's the people who we're talking to mostly. That's the foundation of this country. But if we just have significant numbers of them, he will heal our land. He says it in the scriptures, and I believe what God says in the scriptures. We need to repent. We, who are we? We are the Christians who are not standing up that Dave's talking about. I mean, Coach Dave's a good dude. He knows what he's talking about. And when he says something like that, he hits it right on the head. And we go back to the Bible and it says it. We repent and do our task and live by the law and follow him, him being the Lord God. Follow him, then he will heal our land. And we don't have to ask him if he will. He will. But we've got to do our part. And our part is the repenting. Go back to Abraham. They were going to go out and wipe out Sodom and Gomorrah. God was mad. They're going to wipe them out. He says, well, if we can find 50 people. Do you remember that bartering in the scriptures? If we can find 50, will you do it? Well, I won't do it then if you find 50. If you find 45, will you do it? No, I guess not. If you find 45, I won't. He came all the way down to 10 before he stopped negotiating. And they did destroy it because they couldn't find 10. They only found 4, actually. But the point I would make out here is that We have a power. We must use it. And that's prayer, and that's repenting of our sins, of not doing what we should do if we have any of them. We all have one or two. Except me. I don't have any. I'm a good dude. But anyway, except for those of us who are perfect. There's only been two perfect, me and Christ. But anyway, see, so when you get to these kinds of points, you've got to repent. You've got to follow the word. You've got to do what the Lord has asked. And then he promises he will heal our land. It's right there in Chronicles, 2 Chronicles 7 and 14 or 14 and 7. One of those two verses. Guys,
yep.
Please live our religion. Do what we need to do. Now, Kevin sent me some stuff here this morning. I don't know if he sent it on to you, Doug, or if you were going to mention it, but I will. They are starting a reopen passion, a reopened program where they're going to meet for some pre-stuff this weekend. I think it's New Hampshire. They're going to meet this weekend for some pre-stuff. Then they're going to reopen the business. Don't wait for the governor. We'll do it ourselves. That's their motto. Don't wait for the government to change their mind. We'll do it ourselves. And lots are going to do it. Now that's what we need to be thinking about. That's peaceful. That's asserting your civil disobedience, or it's asserting your belief in God's promises, or it's just asserting honesty. Go do stuff that we need to do. Doug, you always give me time at the end of the program to talk about something. Can I do that time now?
You can have, you got the floor, sir.
I want to talk about debt. You know, I mentioned earlier, we've got 4 million. That's a lot of people. A lot of homes that are delinquent. Now, if the banks follow the pattern that they have followed in the past, you will not be able to make any payment that will bring your loan current unless you pay the whole amount that you're delinquent in. That means that if you don't pay last month's payment and this month you want to start paying it up so that you don't get any further behind, they won't accept it. You got to pay last month's and this month's. That's what that means. Let's talk about other debt, credit card debt, home debt, a car debt, confiscation of our livelihood, confiscation of where we're going to live. All these things are on the point. Do you guys know that we talk about the national debt of being $20 trillion and how bad that is? Oh, yes. And it is. Do you know how bad our consumer debt is? $20 trillion also. $20 trillion, United States citizens or people in the United States borrowing from banks have purchased personal loans to the aggregate of $20 trillion. Now, what does that mean? That means that the payment and the interest is all going into the coffers of the people who are plaguing us. Let me give an illustration. I'm just talking about debt. It applies to all debt. Oh, it applies to all banking debt. Doug, would you like to buy a car tomorrow, a $100,000 car tomorrow? Sure you would.
Okay.
Sure. You're not going to pay cash. You're going to go to the, you can pay cash, I know, but you're not going to. You're going to go to your local bank and you're going to borrow that $100,000. Now, you've been in touch with the dealer. You've selected the car. Everything is ready. Now you're in the bank pleading. That's what you're doing. You're pleading for them to give you a loan. And they hem and haw and haw and hem and eventually condescend to give you a loan so you can buy your car. But you got to put the car down as collateral, don't you? You got to put it down as collateral. You don't pay the debt, they're going to come take it away from you, aren't they? The bank is. So now, the bank then sends a check. They don't send cash. They don't send gold. They send a check or they send an accounting item to the dealership. And he now has $100,000 worth of wealth so he can pay his stuff and get started again. Okay, now, that's absolutely true. Now, you arrange to pay $4,000 a month on the car because you want to get it paid off relatively quickly, and that won't take quite as many years as $200 will. So anyway, so $4,000 a month. You go in the first of the next month, and you hand the bank a check, cashier's check or cash, doesn't matter. You hand them the money, $4,000. It comes out of your assets, your liquidity. You hand them that check for $4,000. What do they do with the check? What do they do with the money? Think about that, guys. What does the bank do with the money? You're of the opinion, or we've been taught, that they're going to pay the car off. That's your debt against the car. No, no, no. They don't have a debt against the car. They didn't put any money in it. They wrote a check. They created the money right then when you signed the paperwork and sent that money to the dealership. They created it out of thin air. The bank did. When you make the payment, they're taking cash that's not thin air. It's your wealth. And they're putting it in their pockets to loan again to somebody else or send it to the Federal Reserve and onto Europe's profit. We are sending billions of dollars, a profit and interest, I mean principal and interest, to the European folks who are doing this to us. We send these things to them and they bring it right back and buy our politicians at all levels and destroy our country. That's where all the money's coming from to destroy our country. It's coming from our debt load. And we're sending our wealth. We're sending our wealth through debt to Europe. We are sending our own wealth to Europe. We must stop debt. Credit card debt. You know, when you use a credit card at the store. Well, how that all amasses, goes to the bank. What does the bank do? Sends them a check. They put the money in their pocket that you just used using your credit card. This, if you're going to use a credit card, pay it off. Never, never incur any further debt. But they've already gained whatever you spent. Checks and cash, they're good. And I'm not saying don't use credit cards. I'm just saying be alert to the fact that when you do, they create money on that very loan, that very minute. And that's how it works. It's actually not that minute. It's not until they get the receipt from the dealer, from the restaurant, from the place. They create massive amounts of money. And we pay it as if it was real money there. And we pay it with real money. Think about that's what our banking system's doing. We're sending our wealth. Get out of debt. That will stop a lot of the problems. Get out of debt. I know there's some you got to do. I understand that. Some businesses, they do debt constantly. That's the same thing. The debt that a business does is treated the same way. The debt is paid with fictitious money, and then the dealership or the company, the organization, has to pay it in real cash that they get from their customers. Get out of debt. Try to do your business not in debt. I hope I'm preaching to the choir. Go ahead.
That's really, I think, one of the precepts in the Bible, that we should not go into debt. Am I right? Or is that, I mean, it's biblical.
Yes, right? That's right. They have the 50-year jubilee or something where everybody's supposed to forgive every debt they've got, something like that. But now let me go a little bit further on the debt issue.
Okay.
You and I, I'm not out of work and you're not out of work, but a lot of people we're talking to are. They're out of work. They need You need to get back to work. Why? Because that's how they're getting to you. If we don't get back to work, if we don't start exercising our given right, the Declaration of Independence and constitutional right to work, if we don't as a mass begin to do that, then under color of law, color of law, it's a law that doesn't exist. They just presumed it does, and we gave them that presumption. If we say it's okay, then we've given them the right to do that. I'm sorry. If they say you got to wear a mask and you do, you have agreed with them to give you that, take away that right. And that's a true statement. If you don't go to work because they say you don't, you have agreed with them that it's okay for them to tell you you can't go to work, even though they don't have the authority to do it. Guys, we have got to do something. We've got, the debt is going to wipe us out. People are going to be homeless, carless. Farmers are not planting because they can't sell it to the restaurants that aren't open. I mean, the effects of this thing are universal. We're going to be, if it stopped right now, we'll still have 6 or 8 months trying to get back to normal, even if we went to normal today. And some of these states are saying they're going to keep us this way for 2 years. They're going to destroy their state. So how will they do that? They'll print money and send you checks. And you'll say, oh, thank you, government. What do you mean, thank you, government? They took away your income and then paid you some money so that they could get you dependent on them. They're just solving a crisis they created. They created the problem by not letting you work. Now they're going to pay you something to give up, to allow you just a little. Oh, well, we'll take care of you then. Oh, yeah. Well, you wouldn't have to take care of us if you didn't do the error in the first place. You don't create a crisis and then come up with a solution. You don't ever have to come up with a solution if you don't create the crisis. Guys, I'm getting all carried away again. The government has created a crisis, and now we're begging them to take it, to stop it. Well, don't beg. Set up groups that will, organizations, back to work, no matter what the government says. We're going to take it upon ourselves because they're not doing it. Solve the crisis yourself as a people, as a unit. And for background on these, now we're going to go back to the Liberty series for a minute. You know, if it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, and it looks like a duck, it's a duck. Now, why do I say that? Let's go back to World War One. Did I mention this last week? World War One, December the 17 and 16, the election of Wilson. When Wilson said, we're going to stay out of the war. I'm going to keep you out of the war. I've done keeping you out of the war. We're not going to go to Europe. We're not. And everybody voted him into office because he kept him out of war. Then he hired an institution, an advertising institution, the media. Okay. He hired that and stuff was produced by the in England in the basements about how bad the Hun was. Oh dear. Killing babies. Oh dear me. And they sent that over and they started a campaign, a get to war campaign. They didn't call it that. They just said, look how bad the Huns are, and got us mad and mad and mad and mad at the Germans. And so we are ready to go to war. So when the Lusitania was sunk and 100 people died, we're ready to go to war and have millions, well, hundreds of thousands of our people killed because of a war that the crisis these people have created. And that's an issue. That's in my books. And that's not the only one. These crises are created constantly. And so the government comes in to solve a crisis they created. And since they created it, they're going to solve it. And they're going to solve it by taking away rights of ours. Oh, guys.
Wow.
Why do you think I wrote these books? I get so worked up. I wrote these books so that somebody would at least have them be able to read without my carrying on or not being able to find me. Guys. This stuff is important. We've got to get our rights back. We've got to get our country back. But you can't do it if you don't understand why it's there and what's happening. And I do name names. Oh, yeah, I name names. First page of the preface on the first book tells the names of the people who are doing this thing. It's called The Horrors of the 21st Century, and who caused them, and how they caused them, and why they caused them. Oh, Doug, why don't you talk for a few minutes?
Well, I will. I sorry about that. I was reaching for your book and I just knocked everything off the shelf. Oh my goodness. You're right though.
I figure you just gave the program over to me and you'll be back tomorrow.
It'd probably be rated better if I did that. But you know, you're exactly right. Your first book, by the way, the Liberty series, I was going through the second earlier today but your first book. Before I do that, you had mentioned about, sending people money, you know, and it sounds like an awful lot like the universal, basic income, doesn't it? That we're talking about.
Yes. I've heard whispers, rumors, $2,000 a month to every family.
Right.
They already did $1,200 to every person.
Right. Most people have already gotten it, but you know, like perhaps some of your books, maybe it's some haven't. I don't know, but okay, man, this is not a good idea because where in the world are they getting the money from? Universal basic income is communism, right? That's what it is.
Right. It's absolute communism. By the way, they're going to get it from us. They're going to send us some money, but they're going to get it back from us in just a few months from the inflation that's caused. It's an inflation tax. Every dime you have, even if it's in your mattress dug up in the backyard, every dime you've got is affected by that tax. It's an inflation tax. Nobody pays it officially. Nobody collects it officially, but it is created officially by printing money. It's an inflation tax. Your money becomes worthless. Therefore, you have to have more of it to buy the same goods. Inflation tax. Yeah. They're going to get it back from us. So everybody gets their $1,200, or if everybody gets their $2,000, it's a scheme for the government to destroy our free enterprise system. And they'll get it back from us as they socialize the country and put us to work in socialism and in inflation. Inflation is a terrible monster.
Absolutely. Talking about this in the whole, do you think people like Whitmer of Michigan, as one example, do they know what they're doing? I mean, is it a conscious decision that, okay, I've got this communist ideology and I'm going to implement this? I mean, or are they just plain stupid? You know, I hate to ascribe conspiracy to stupidity. That's all.
No, I don't think they're stupid, Doug. I think that they're doing things because they have the power to do them. And it sounds nice for election. I saved you. I sent money to you. Okay? It sounds nice for election. And they want the power and they violate their authority. And then there's the other group. They know what they're doing consciously because they're being paid to do it. They're not doing it out of the goodness of their heart. They're doing it because people in the background are paying them to do it in one way or another. How do so many of our congressmen, representatives, and senators, how do they come into Congress being regular people, not very much money, and go out millionaires? How does that happen? Where does that come from? Have you ever wondered where does all that money come from that they seem when they leave? They're billionaires.
Yes.
I mean, I think Obama came in as a pauper, but went out as a millionaire.
And alternatively, of course, you had Bubba and his wife saying, "Oh, we left the White House dead, you know, dead nuts broke." Yeah, right. Okay. Well, they certainly made up for it. If that was the case, they certainly made up for it since. We're at the top of the hour, folks. Dr. Richard Proctor, the man, I'm telling you, he's the man. ProvisInstitute.com. ProvisInstitute.com. I'm telling you what, folks, Saving the Constitution, you need that book. Liberty Series, you really need that to tell you what the historical context is. And, of course, all of the other books there, including the one on economics, tremendous. We're going to be right back with Dr. Proctor right after this. Stay right where you're at.
Reporting on what the mainstream media won't, you're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Exposing the new.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It is Wednesday, May 13th, 2020. The weather outside, though, where I live, I don't know, where Eric and I live, and our families. What was it, Eric? About 30 degrees today, this morning? I mean, it was incredibly cold.
Yeah, early it was.
I'm telling you, I don't know. Midway through May, we've got, Arctic temperatures. It's just incredible. And of course, a, you know, full news day. And I see just off topic here. I see the, Obamagate again. I toss that out there for your, for your visual, I'd like you to observe what's taking place with Obamagate. The fact that all of the recent disclosures are confirming is they're confirming what we've known, that the spying, that the abuse of power, the FISA abuse, the surveillance abuse, the all of that was really the guy behind it was Obama. He was calling the shots, and we knew that, but the confirmation is there. So keep your eye on that. I really think that we're going to be seeing more. Now again, look, folks, I don't believe we're going to go to the up to Obama in terms of, you know, making him face justice, although I'd like to see that happen. But I think it's possible that some people pretty close to him just might. Before we get back to my guest, Dr. Richard Proctor, folks, go to bookmark and go to provisinstitute.com. And by the way, get the book, Saving the Constitution. Do it today. Yes, you know what? It's worth waiting a day or two if the post office decides, oh, I'm going to hold this for a day or two, just to piss people off. And, you know, I'm telling you, it happens. I've seen it happen on both ends. ProvisInstitute.com, Richard Proctor, he wrote the book, he packs the book, he ships the book himself. And I give him a lot of credit. ProvisInstitute.com. The link is going to be in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com. Before we get back to Dr. Proctor, I want to talk to you about honey. Yes, not your honey that, you know, not the honey you squeeze there and sits next to you on the couch when you're watching TV. No, honey. I know a lot of us shop online. We shop online a lot. But did you know you can make online shopping even better? You can with Honey. Honey is the free online shopping tool that saves you money online. Honey automatically finds the best promo codes and applies them to your cart, which makes online shopping finally feel as easy as it's supposed to be. Here's how it works. Imagine you're shopping on one of your favorite sites. I don't know. Could be eBay or whatever. Best Buy, Target. I mean, look, you've got your own favorite sites. When you check out, this little box drops down, and all you have to do is click Apply Coupons. Wait a few seconds for it to scan for every promo code on the internet and watch the prices drop. Now, my wife shops, I gotta tell you, she shops a lot online. And she, and this is a true story, our patio furniture set, the table and chairs. I mean to tell you, it's like 30 years old. Okay. Well, she bought a new patio furniture set, and we were talking, and she said, look, this is pretty expensive. I mean, should I buy it? And I said, hey, you know, we've had this since we've been married. I mean, my goodness. Now she purchased this, patio set. You know that she saved $191 in that one purchase. I couldn't believe it. $191. And no, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a gold plated furniture set. It was an outdoor patio set, table, umbrella, chairs. And that's it. I mean, it was a significant savings. Honey has found it's over 18 million members, over $2 billion in savings. Did you know that Honey supports over 30,000 stores online, and they're adding more every day? Users love Honey. That's why it has over 100,000 plus 5-star reviews on the Google Chrome store. Now here's what you need to do. Not using Honey is literally passing up free money. It's free to use. installs in just a few seconds. Plus, it's backed by PayPal, so you know you can trust it. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/Hagman. That's joinhoney.com/Hagman. And remember, there's two ends on Hagman. You'll start saving money right away. Again, my guest is Dr. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. Bookmark that website. Get the book, Saving the Constitution. And for extra credit today, get the Liberty series. Okay. A couple of things. In fact, volume one, last hour, we were talking about volume one, naming names. Dr. Proctor, where did you, where's that list? I have some things marked here.
Right on the preface.
Okay.
Right on the preface. This title of the preface is Horrors of the 21st Century.
There it is. Yeah. Thank you. I was going to.
Let me give you a little example of why I wrote that particular item.
Okay.
I was at the gym. I actually went to the gym. I was at the gym on the bicycles, you know, doing those things and watching the movie show, watching the TV, because they had nice TVs. And on came this movie about World War II, pilots and bombers flying from England to Germany. And they'd send out 30 planes and 25 would come back. And they counted them as they came back. Now, I thought to myself, I used to work in the Air Force Museum a long, long time ago. There's 10 guys in every one of those B-25s that were flying into Europe, bombing Germany. 10 guys. Every time a plane went down, 10 guys lost their lives or were imprisoned. 10 guys. And I became infuriated as I watched that, because all that war was for was to get money for the people in the shadow government that I was writing about everywhere else on the whole Liberty series. But at the moment, I was just doing volume one. And they was just to get money for them, on a day that 5 planes didn't come back, 50 guys died because they wanted money. And I got so angry, the horrors of the 21st century. So I came back and I looked at all the stuff that happened in the 21st century. And then if you add it up, it's millions and millions of people have been killed by their own governments because they want more power and more money. Guys, that's what that's about. And that's why I wrote that 21st century. Go ahead, what you were going to chat about, Doug. I just want to get back.
You know, it's interesting because all wars are bankers' wars. And I know that we often talk on this program about the globalists. Well, who are the globalists? Well, the globalists are the people who have the money, the families and the descendants of the families who run the things. You know, Ted Brewer talks about, well, the people the same people who get us into wars, you know, took down Building 7 and World Trade Center. And I mean, none of this is conspiracy. But you mentioned the Lusitania last hour, and you mentioned, World War II, for example. If people really understood that World War II was brought on by the unjust Treaty of Versailles, and if they really understood how Germany was set up. Now, this is not to apologize for anything. I'm not being a German apologist or a Nazi apologist, more specifically. But if they knew the politics behind World War One, and you know, I remember taking history in high school, and this was glossed over. It was glossed over. But the fact is, World War One, for example, was blamed on the assassination of the Archduke Ferdinand of Austria. But anyway, and you mentioned the Lusitania with Americans on board. Germany tried to warn Americans, you write, not to sail on the ship as it contained a cargo of munitions. But the New York newspapers wouldn't print the warning.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely right. The only reason we have that warning in print is because somebody out in Des Moines printed it. That's the only reason we know about it.
And you know, there was a Twilight Zone episode, and to kind of get off in the weeds there, there was a Twilight Zone episode about that, and I thought it was pretty cutting edge. But anyway, But you see, let's look at where the money came from. The families of, and the descendants of the Rothschild, that's a name that we hear all the time. Warburg, Schiff, Kuhn Loeb, Meyer, Morgan, Rockefeller, Harriman, Lazard Brothers, Milner, Perkins, Dulles, for example, House. They created the necessary environment to provide them needed money for these wars. So, and Dulles, I mean, my goodness, think of the Dulles brothers. Harriman, and think of a relationship to Bush. And, you know, there's a the presidents of the United States, the family trees. Boy, there's a lot of root rot there. I kind of like to call it, or intertwined stuff going on, right? Am I right?
Right. Yes, absolutely right. If you look at the Skull and Bones, the Order of the Skull and Bones out of Yale, you look at that and you find the Bush family has seven people that went, that attended that, all the way from their grandfather, Prescott, all the way down, seven people in their family, including Barbara Bush's family too there. These people are intertwined. If you look today, why, you see Kennedy and you see the Bushes, or you know, they say all together, all camaraderie. And they're supposed to be quasi-foes because they're Republicans and Democrats. They're supposed to be foes. They're not foes. I see people in the government change from one administration to the other, from one party to the other, back and forth. There's no difference. They're all the same. And they're all financed, funded, and arranged for by the international banking establishment. Now, if you want to see a real good analysis of what happens at Skull and Bones, get yourself a copy of The Skulls. It's a movie, The Skulls, you can get it. It's a trilogy. There are three others come with it, but the best one is the first one, The Skulls. And it teaches, shows us exactly what goes on in the Skull and Bones operation. Sounds like it's a conspiracy theory. It is a conspiracy, but it's not a theory, guys. There is no conspiracy theory. It's conspiracy fact. There's just too much points to it, too much about it, too many sources, too many places, too many things, too many documents. It's a fact. And those people are bred in a place like Yale University and a society known as the Skull and Bones. And there's a couple of other societies at the same time doing the same one, but that's the daddy of them all. We're being taken down a trail by a group of people who are perpetuating themselves and their money through the things that we allow them to do by our actions.
You said something last hour, and I wanted to kind of touch on this. You said that in banking, we end up sending the money that's collected. Use the new car example, that money goes to Europe. I suspect you're talking about the city of London, within the city of London, where even the Queen has to curtsy to the powers that be.
No, I'm not. I'm talking about the financiers of Europe and Europe, and all of them.
Okay.
The Rothschild family, all those families, the Lazard family, Kuhn Loeb Company. Kuhn Loeb paid Paul Warburg to come to the United States in 1906 to start a central bank, because they make money in central banks. So they paid him. Do you know what they paid him in today's dollars? $33 million a year.
Wow.
That's what they paid him to start a central bank. And he got that every year until the central bank was organized. And then he became the chairman of the New York Order of the Federal Reserve.
Wow.
$33 million. Oh, by the way, they added expenses if he had any that he couldn't afford. $33 million a year. It was actually $500,000 per year in 1906, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
$33 million current value, right.
Moves up to us today at $33 million. You have to do a little thing about looking about prices and wages and that kind of stuff and analyze what it was then and look at the – it takes a little while to figure that out. Econometrics is where it's all done.
Okay.
But it's $33 million a year they paid him to get a central bank here in the United States. What do you think it's worth to them? Well, $33 million. The Federal Reserve made $5 billion the first year of World War I. World War II, and made $45 billion. I hope I didn't say that wrong. $45 billion at the end of World War II. Do you think $33 million was paid back?
No.
And we're paying it, guys.
Man, okay. You know, I wanted to ask you this. This is kind of out of left field, and forgive me for this being out of left field, but you know, you talk about the families, you talk about Warburg and the families, the Titanic. I've often wondered about the Titanic. Things would have turned out a lot differently, I think, had the Titanic not sank. And I'm talking about the people who were aboard that had some ideas that were not quite in line with what the powers that were and be wanted to implement. Any thoughts on that, or am I just totally lunatic?
I have never thought about the Titanic as a part of this, but let's look. If it walks like a duck, looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's a duck. Well, let me see. World War II, we were brought into by government conspiracy. World War One, we were brought into by government conspiracy. Those that don't agree with me, but the Twin Towers were taken down, government conspiracy. Well, we had an instance occur out in the Gulf of Mexico with an oil rig, government conspiracy. Maybe it was. It fits in line. They don't care about the people on the boat, just the ones that they don't like.
Well, I'll tell you what, it was, yeah, back in 1912, you know, I bring this up, or anyone brings this up, it's like, man, you're just, you're a real whack job. But when you look at the evidence, or at least what we know to be, or we can identify as pieces of evidence with respect to the Titanic, I think it's a very interesting, issue to probe. But okay, I just wanted to ask you that nonetheless.
Let's just on the same subject. Let me take one more thing here. Now, you're talking about government and we're talking about these people. Well, we just talked about Paul Warburg here a moment ago. Well, Max Warburg was his brother. Yep. Max Warburg was the finance guy in Germany. And they worked together to make sure that the money was there. And the World War One ran out of money in 1916, going into 17. So we, Wall Street, financed the German army so we could keep going.
People find that hard to believe. We financed.
No, I'm sure they do.
That, you know, it, yes, but follow the money. We financed the German army.
They were brothers. They worked together.
Yep.
There was again, at that same time, Max arranged for a train to be able to leave the harbor up in the channel, English Channel. Leave that harbor, go all the way through the Allied lines, all the way, Max would have raged the Allied lines, went all the way through the lines, went all the way back to Russia, back to Moscow. What did it have on it? $20 million in gold to finance the Bolshevik Revolution. Guys, this is the way things work. You might not want to believe it, but that's how it works. We think, oh, they really wouldn't do that. They wouldn't kill thousands of people. They don't care. They don't care about those people. They don't care about you and I. They do it because it's profitable for them. That's why they do it. World War One was to make money. The soldiers in World War One attempted to stop fighting during the first Christmas season. They stopped fighting. They played ball across the line during the Christmas season.
That's right.
Then the leaders wanted to get the war started again, so they brought them back. They wouldn't fight. Hey, I like that guy. He's a good dude. I'm not going to fight. They had to move all those people off the line, bring new people up so they could keep the war going. These things are not fiction, and these wars are all planned. There is no government coincidence. It's all planned.
You know, I had forgotten about that. You're right. Christmas hiatus, Christmas break, and the enemy, enemies playing ball with one another over the Christmas break. Refusing to fight because there was a friendship that developed or at least a modicum of respect.
Call it respect. Call it respect. They're people, just like we are. Why are we shooting at them? And it was both sides, too, by the way, not just the Allied side.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, very interesting indeed, folks. This is the stuff, I'm telling you, this is the stuff contained, the information, I shouldn't say stuff, that's contained in the Liberty series. And I'm a big proponent of knowledge. And this Liberty series, it's six volumes, if I'm not mistaken. Six volumes. You haven't added six any volumes. More, right?
I didn't add any more. I ended that book and did other things.
Okay. I was going to say, you didn't write another volume over the weekend. Six volumes, folks.
Well, there sure could be a seventh volume now covering all the stuff that's happened since 2001.
Yeah. But, folks, the Liberty, will it survive, Dr. Richard Proctor? It's well worth your investment. And I've got to tell you, if you can't buy the entire series, would you say volume 1, volume 6 kind of get you started?
Yes, they're very important. Those two are very important.
All right.
Now, I want to mention something that about this is important, because I just said there's a lot to write since 2001 based on what's happened. The volumes were written during a particular time with articles during a particular time period. Well, someone today would say, well, those are old. They're not current anymore. That's ridiculous. All of the information that happened is documented so that we can see what will happen today the same way by the same people. And these books will still be current. The examples, the illustrations, the patterns, they'll still be current in 2050. Because government stays the same. So this just shows a pattern of the United States government going from a free country to where we are today and how it happened. And that's a sequence of events that is historical, won't change just because the dates go by. That's why I don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's very topical. Yeah.
Now, the articles, you mentioned the articles in the first part, that not just IBIDs, but the actual articles. You know, you can't find these articles anymore. They're not available. You try to go out and find these same articles. You've got all the information. You know when they printed. You know the author. You know the date. It's in the book. Go find the article. Can't be found.
There was one, I think, in Volume 5 that I attempted to locate. And I'll tell you what, it's not there. It's not there by title, by link, by anything. So I went to the Internet Archive, and the site where it was – The site did not have the archive. In other words, it prohibited the archiving of that story or that article. And I don't have at the risk of knocking everything down again, I'm not going to reach for the book. But you're right. And they're still relevant today. Eric and I were talking earlier today, and he wanted me to ask you this, since we're talking about the Liberty series. He said this to me, and it made me think. He said, I wonder if there was anything. When Dr. Proctor was writing the books, I wonder if there was anything, Liberty series, I wonder if there was anything that surprised him, that you know, really shocked or surprised him. So I'm going to ask you, in this series, was there anything that said, that made you say, nah, this can't be true?
Not one thing. And I'll tell you why, because I've been studying this since the late 60s, constantly. So all these things I accepted, and I've been learning them as they went. I've been doing this, preparing for this for 50 years. I've been preparing this for a long time, folks. And I just put it all together. I wasn't surprised about anything. What I had to do was find documents that supported what I knew was happening. And I did. I did. It was interesting. During the period I was doing this, coincidence? I don't know. During the period I was doing this, scads and scads of articles came up to fill up all these subjects. At the end, after I finished writing the subjects and all that, it all went to talk about Obama and his politics and stuff. And none of these kinds of articles were written again. Interesting, I thought. I couldn't do it today. Today's articles don't cover these subjects. They don't do it.
Which, it makes me wonder two things. What's going to be taught? What will be taught to our children in elementary and high school about various topics, and how history obviously can be manipulated through headline, messing with the headlines, messing with the stories.
George Orwell told the story in his book, They had people rewriting the history every day to make it agree with what they wanted today to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, we're seeing this play out. And that's something that, every day, like I said, when I mentioned the, barber and, you know, who's saying, no, you know, I'm not gonna, I got one foot in the grave and one foot on a banana peel. 77 years old, Gretchen Whitmer decides to make him an example. I mean, like you said, and like we talked about, U.S., or 18 U.S.C., section 242, color of law. We can, you know, we have to stand up in mass and say no, enough of this. And you mentioned too, Kevin sent you, as you said, something on the proactive side. There's going to be some marches or protests.
It's called Reopen. He called it Reopen. It's a Reopen organization. And they're having some things this weekend in preparatory to that. And they're going, I don't know who's going to participate, but the goal is to get all the businesses, and I think it's New Hampshire, get all the businesses of New Hampshire open. That'd be neat. I would think that would be neat.
Yeah. And if everyone did that, we'd be better shape, right? I mean,
but. Yes. I mean, I keep saying go back to work, but if the people who own the companies won't put you to work, you can't do it.
That's true. That's true. All right. Now I'm gonna whatever you think is important here, because I got kind of off track when I was asking you some different questions, and I apologize for that. What do you think is most important for people? Obviously, 242 of the code. We need to understand that. We need to get back to work. We need to understand, by the way, economics is tremendous. I had mentioned to you during the break that. There was a 5-minute segment about economics that people really, I got a lot of great feedback on that. That was from last week. So, I mean, whether it's economics, whether it's the Constitution, whatever you think is important for us to address, please, I ask that you do so. Whatever, you know, section.
It's interesting to me that new things come up all the time. This thing from Ted White came up over the last few days. Section 242 of Title 18. I've gone beyond what he wrote. I've got into the definitions, where they are, what this kind of stuff means, what it's supposed to be. It's not 3 pages. It's 2.5, 2 and a little bit. But it helps you understand better what color of law means, what it is that they're doing, and why it's against the law to do it. It's presumptive rights they don't have to exert to take away our rights. And we need to know these things. That's why I volunteer to send it out. Everybody who wants these 3 pages, just write me. I've got it. I just send it back to you. I don't mind. It doesn't take me a second to turn one of those around. We need, what do I think's most important? I keep stressing getting back to work. Maybe I should stress something else on this subject. Let's get back to church. Let's get back to church. Let's pray. Let's focus on the spiritual aspect of the promises of the Lord Jesus, of the things that Jesus Christ has said to us and promised us, of the things that he did for us. Let's get back to the blessings that we have in this country. Even though the country's like it is, it's even as bad as we're getting, it's worse overseas. Oh, my young son's over there in Europe in a Mid-Eastern country, and it's worse there than we have it here. We must always remember the blessings we have in the United States of America. We must remember the people that have blessed us, and we must remember the actions of the Lord in causing our country, causing our country to be set up, inspiring the Constitution that's been written, inspiring the guys to write the Declaration of Independence. First time these things have ever happened. Oh, the Magna Carta was a little bit, and the charter, the Mayflower Charter was a little bit, but to get an entire government that has existed now for over 200 years with these kinds of concepts, now they're being whittled away, but we still have a lot of it. Pray that we'll be safe. Pray for Trump. Guys, I think Trump's being beat to death. I think things are happening in the background we don't know about that are just absolutely turning him into, well, anyway. I think he's being put up with, to help us, he's putting up with significant personal loss. Guys, We need to remember what he's doing for us. I know there's a whole detractors, all kinds of people. No, guys. If he didn't do anything but stop Hillary Clinton from getting in office, we should praise him and set him up as a hero. If that's all he did, but he did that and many, many more things. Folks, we have a country today because of President Trump. I have no idea what it would look like if we'd have had that lady. That was a stretch of the imagination. Have that person in office. What would have happened to us? We don't know, and I'm glad we don't. Oh, I'm glad we don't.
Hey, go ahead.
Get back to the spiritual aspects of this. I firmly believe that that God put President Trump in office on purpose to make sure our country survived. On purpose. Look at what happened. I mean, here the people in New York were celebrating already before all the counts were in. And she says she got the popularity vote. I got the popular vote. I should have been. Everybody's now saying, oh, the popular vote's so important. Well, let me say this. If we were to look at the counties, not the votes, but the county votes, not the individual votes, the county votes, we would find that there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 3,300 counties in the United States. That's what we would discover. Then we would look and we would see that President Trump won the election in 3,000 of those. And she won in 300. And then you can look at another statistic, the 317 square miles, a circuit of the metropolitan New York. That group of people alone can control our country. Why are we going to have 317 square miles controlling our country? The whole country, 317 square miles.
Are you serious? 317 square miles of the 300 counties they were talking about?
Yeah, yes.
Oh, but people will say, well, they're populous.
That's two different issues. The counties go through all the United States. All the counties are in the United States. But if we just look at population votes, those counties, which comprise that 317 square miles, that all group of people could also have done it. I'm not saying there's two separate issues, two separate items, two separate statistics, but they're both exactly showing how the people can be controlled by the cities, by the corruption of the cities. We can be controlled. Now you got to just look at what's happening in Northern California and Southern California, what's happening to the people in Colorado, what's happening to the people in Virginia. You got people that are wanting to have freedom, and you got the guys in the main capital saying, no, you can't have it, and we're in charge because we're here. And they are in charge because they're there. And everybody loses. All the rural people lose because they don't want that kind of stuff, but they haven't got enough votes to stop it. 3,000 counties voted for Trump, grassroots, and only 300 counties voted for Hillary. Grassroots, guys.
Grassroots. Yeah, I think, you and I at least at one point spoke about really making a difference on the local level. I know I spoke with Sheriff Richard Mack, and we spoke about that. You know, what we can do. You know, maybe we can't force Washington as a group. You know, certainly get tens of thousands, if not a million, people there. But maybe we can get 1,000 people locally. You know, and push locally. And I think that there's a lot of merit to that.
Now you're talking about something that's dear to my heart. You'll discover this in the conclusion of the Saving the Constitution book. First, you got to have some people, honest legislators. And they've got to be in the state, not the federal. Anybody who's honest in the federal is dishonest, not too long in the federal. No, I shouldn't say that. Some weren't. But anyway, so this is what I say step by step to get our country back. First, the very, very first thing is we've got to strengthen the only party in the United States that has any idea to do it. The Libertarian Party, they don't care. They won't do it. The Green Party, they don't care. They won't do it. The DNR guys, they'll never do anything that's right. The Constitution Party of the United States, it's a unknown party. Pretty well. It only has 120,000 members. Some number like that, that's hardly enough to even notice. Guys, that party needs to be strengthened. By and large, that party wants people to follow the Constitution. They want the Constitution in place. My book, Saving the Constitution, is a book they give out to people who make donations to there. It's going out all the time to donations, people making donations to the Constitution Party. They make regular donations and they get this book they get all of my books eventually. But the point I'm trying to make is that Saving the Constitution has a key, a system to do it. First thing we've got to do is we've got to get those 1,000 people, 1,000 people or more as a part of the party, and have people within that group run for office that are honest, and then elect them. Elect them. So, you know, I've been running for treasurer or auditor for, this is my fourth run. My first election, my first voting was about 32,000 votes. But people began to hear, latch on to me. The next time was about 46,000 votes. Last time was 75,000 votes. I keep going at that rate. By the time I get to be 150, I'll get elected. But the point I make is if we had enough people just joining honest people together, people don't join the Constitution Party because they say, well, yeah, it doesn't do anything. That's a waste of my vote. Hey, guys, put all the wasted votes together and you get rid of the guys who are the wasted votes. But we don't do that. We just say, well, I won't have any effect. We don't think one person matters. Well, that young lady wrote a book called Silent Spring, and it mattered, killed millions of people because of that book. Another young lady wrote about feminism and women, and look at what happened in abortion and all that stuff. Look how many have been killed because of that. Look at what happens every time someone who is interested in pushing and is interested in doing something, what happens? Who was it that stopped all the schools, the school teachings of God and the Bible and all of that? One person started all of that. Let's have one or two people start other things. Let's get involved in the Constitution Party. Then we get constitutional people elected who will read the Constitution and discover it. And they will read in Article 6 that they're taking an oath of office to support the Constitution of the United States. And since they're honest people, they will look around at their state laws and say, what state laws do we have that are not constitutional? By Jove, there's one right off the bat. It's called the number of congressmen, of representatives we should have in Congress. Well, we should have thousands. Utah should have 100. All you got to do is figure out how many groups of 30,000 you have in your state, and that's how many representatives you should have. The very first thing, now that's not the very first thing, but well, that's one of the very important things, is get that right number. The very, very first thing would be to get the militia organized. That's Article 1, Section 8, paragraphs 15 and 16. Get that organized. So you're supposed to appeal to the federal government to get the weapons, but they won't have it. They won't do it. So what you do is you get your people organized. How big would the militia be in Utah again? 800,000 at least. That's a pretty big group. And those people would all be working as the militia of the state of Utah, the official militia, not something that they've started individually, not a rogue deal. It would be the official state organization. Now, that organization can help for the next organization when they elect the 100 people to go back to Congress. Some of that militia will accompany them, not as a threat, but as a, hey, the Constitution gives us the right to seat them. Well, we changed that in 29. You can't seat that many. You can only seat 4. No, sorry. That does not supersede the Constitution. We're going to seat all of our guys. Have a nice day. Better get a bigger building. By the way, if the Utah started to do that kind of stuff, Colorado might, but Wyoming would, Idaho would. Aha, so would a lot of other states that see Utah doing, they say, well, we're not going to do that. They're going to have 100 people in Congress. We'll only have 6. Not so. We're entitled to more. They'll do the same thing. Stuff would begin to happen if we would just work towards it. But we don't, because it's hard. Oh, I don't know. Maybe we'll be able to. I can't do it. I got to watch off. Open another beer, Mabel. I got to watch this sports show. Anyway, so, folks. That's the first two steps. What more steps could you do? Well, the state could say, just a minute, the senators are supposed to be appointed by the legislators. Wait a minute, They're not supposed to be elected by the people. Article 5 says that we're supposed to have our suffrage in the Senate. The state's supposed to have it. Since we don't have it, that's unconstitutional. We're going to get it back. So the law would be could be passed by, again, honest legislators, representatives and senators in the state. So we're going to get our stuff back. So they would pass a law. No, I'm talking about Utah now. No popular elections for senators will be held in Utah any longer, period. Won't be done. Legislature will appoint them. And we're going to review the records of the senators that are there now because we're appointing them. And if they're not following the Constitution, we'll replace them and put somebody else there. Okay, that's another step. See these steps? You got representatives right now. Representatives, that's the word. And now you got senators that are right. Well, then you're going to look at something else. And this is very important. This is very clear and dear to my heart. You're going to look at the laws of Texas. And you're going to see that there's absolutely no validity in the 16th Amendment. I don't care what the Supreme Court says. They changed the law. They changed the Constitution. That's not legal. They don't have that right. Since they don't have that right, the 16th Amendment is not in accordance with law. Well, someone would say, well, the people ratified it, so it must be.
I was just going to say that.
You can't ratify something that is not legal to begin with. So what's not legal? Well, to begin with, the fifth article says in the last line that the senators will always represent the states in the Senate. It says that. It doesn't say it by the words I just said, but it says that. I show you how it says that. Anyway, so the next thing you're going to do is you're going to look at the law of taxes. All the way through the 1800s, the Supreme Court always, with precedents, upheld you cannot tax the people directly over and over and over. Well, if you can't do it then and you can't do it now, so what makes this? Well, this is wrong because Black's Law Dictionary, which I also discuss at length in these books, Black's Law Dictionary is very, very clear in amendments. They cannot change the original contract. That's against the law. That's against the legal laws. You can't change the original contract. You can add amendments to it, and you can change errors, but you cannot change the document. That this particular 16th Amendment changed the document completely throughout whole areas of the Constitution, just in one sweep of the pen. That's not legal. Can't do that. So the 16th Amendment is not legal. And since the 16th Amendment is not legal, we're going to pass a law that no member of the state of Utah will file a 1040 or a federal or company file a 1040 again. It's not legal. The taxes are supposed to be direct taxes on the state of Utah from the federal government. It says it very clearly in Article 1, Section 2, Paragraph 3. I believe that's the one. Anyway, so then they can't do that. So we're going to stop having anybody fill out a 1040 and we're going to stand behind them. Now, if I don't fill a 1049 by myself, they'll throw me in jail. But if the state says you cannot do it, then I'll just say, hey, the state told me I can't do it, and I follow the state's laws. They'll throw me in jail if I do it. So I'm not going to do it. And if we do those, we'll take our militia, lock the doors, okay? Lock the doors to the IRS buildings. Have a nice day, guys. You can find a job somewhere else. Not going to be here in Utah. Every state could do that if they would. I remember sitting when I was running for election, I remember sitting in the area down during the sessions of Congress, of the legislature here in Utah. And I heard the senators talking about how can we get our representatives on this. But now I know. Follow the Constitution. That's all. You don't need anything more than that. No new laws, no new amendments, no nothing. Just pick up the document of 1787 and do it. That's all. That's all you have to do. Then what about all the farmers and the BLM and all the things that people, we've got to stop this. Oh, this BLM, it's destroying us. Oh my. The fish guys destroyed the people in Oregon. Oh dear me. And we had people destroying the guy Bundy's farm in Nevada. Oh, what can we do about this? Well, since the federal government, in accordance with Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 17, can have no land, that means BLM can't have any land. That means the Forestry Service doesn't have any land. That means that the Yellowstone Park belongs to Wyoming. That means that all the Arches Parks here in Utah, Arches and Zions, all of those all belong to Utah. We're going to take them over. we're going to lock the doors of the BLM. We're going to lock the doors of the Forestry Service, and the militia will go there to lock the doors and make sure that people don't sneak around the back door. No, guys, you're not invited here anymore. Here come the federal marshals to keep us, get you guys back in line again. They're going to show up, and our militia will say, well, guys, nice of you to come by. We'll feed you some meals and take you to the border, and then you can go wherever you want to go. But don't come back here. We'll throw you in jail. Guys, we have that authority in the state. 10th Amendment of the Constitution, and the Constitution itself gives us that authority. Article 6 says we must pay faith and obedience and allegiance and oath to the Constitution of the United States. That's paragraph 3 of Article 6. Says that every judicial officer and every representative and every governor, everybody, has got to take an oath. They're going to swear allegiance to the Constitution. Got to do it. If you do it, you got to follow that oath. Okay? If the states would do that, we would get our country back. It's very clear. No new laws. Just do what we've already sworn to do. Nothing new. It's all outlined. Conclusion, volume 6. That's it.
Saving the Constitution.
All outlined in the confusion of saving the Constitution.
Yep.
All outlined in the conclusion. All of it. Step by step by step.
Yep.
Guys, then you can do anything else. Anytime the government passes something that's non-constitutional, you don't have to say, how are we going to pay for it? You can say, no, we're not doing it. It's not constitutional. Done.
Yep.
And another thing that needs to be done is we need to get banks that are not Federal Reserve banks organized in the states and keep the profits of the bank in the states to run our state governments. There you have it.
How do we do that? I understand. Go ahead.
The last one? Is that what you're asking? How do we do the last one?
How do we do the banking? You're doing it. I think, right?
Pardon?
You're moving to do just that, if memory serves me.
I'm moving to do just that. And when I'm down in the state offices talking about the guys, because I want to organize the bank, they say to me, well, you can't organize it without the FDIC. So I looked into the purpose of the FDIC to see if that made any difference. The FDIC, it pretends like it's an insurance company. No, it isn't. It's the controlling factor of all the banks. They come into the bank, and if the Federal Reserve doesn't like them, the FDIC finds something wrong and they close it. And that's how it's done. So you got to get the FDIC out of your company. How do you get them out? The legislature passes the law that says you don't have to have the FDIC in your bank. You can if you want, but you don't have to. That's all you have to do. Because in the state of Utah, 20 years ago, you can if you want. Then they passed the law. Now you must. When they pass the law that now you must, if you ever get any depositors' money, then the FDIC is going to come and look at you. So you can open a bank that only loans money. Capital money never is any deposits, just capitalization. Then you can do that. But that's what I'm working on to do now. When the disease is over, or at least the state guys go back to office, I'll go and talk with the guys in the banking business and say, look, I want to organize this bank.
Okay.
If you organize a bank that will work in your state under the articles of the state and the bill that I wrote, which I'll also send to anybody if they want it, the bill that I wrote says under the authority of the United States Constitution, Article 10th Amendment, we are organizing this public citizens bank for our people. You can use any words you want, but it just has to say outside of the Federal Reserve Organization, completely outside of that organization. Now you can do it. But if the legislature says you cannot because you got to have the FDIC, then they have stopped you from having a bank unless it's FDIC. And then you're under the control of the Federal Reserve and you achieve nothing.
Okay.
And we ought to probably do this very quickly because the Federal Reserve is moving to take over the Treasury of the United States.
Yes. And this is going to be combined, I think, with digital currency, perhaps, maybe, and some
sure,
identification.
Sure.
Go ahead.
I'm sure that kind of stuff will happen. Digital currency is a way. That's a way to create money and control it. And then you don't have to worry about, you can print all you want, do what you want. Nobody will really know. Of course, the economy will know. So the same effects will always occur because government cannot change the laws of economics. When there's too much money, chasing the same amount of goods, prices go up. It's called inflation.
Hmm. Okay. Man. Dr. Richard Proctor is my guest, as you know, folks. ProvisInstitute.com is his website. Saving the Constitution. This is the book that needs to go out to everyone on the planet, but especially in this country, in my view. That's Saving the Constitution. Go to ProvisInstitute.com. Get your copy right now. And I'm telling you, it's so important. I know that, look, everyone I've talked to that's read this book is just amazed at the information and amazed at the level of knowledge they didn't have, as I was. I thought I was pretty smart, but nah, not quite as smart as the framers and the explainer, Dr. Proctor, in Saving the Constitution. Of course, the Liberty Series as well as Bathroom Economics. All books, all great books there at ProvisInstitute.com. I got one question I want to ask you because time's short here, and I want to get this in before the end of the program. This just in recently, Facebook blacklisted the page Michiganers Against Excessive Quarantine. It's a group with almost 400,000 members. It's about over 380,000 members. It served as the central organizing hub for protests against Michigan's lockdown. They blitzed it. Facebook blitzed it. I've gotten a couple of email questions for you. Does censorship apply to things like Facebook and Twitter, or is that because they're privately held, it doesn't apply?
They're privately held companies. They can do whatever they want as long as it doesn't violate any law. And censorship isn't a law. So, yes, they can do exactly what they did. How tough is it to do a blog?
Not that
I've
tough.
I've never done one. Not no, tough. No. Could a blog be formed with among that group of 400,000 people so they could communicate with each other?
Yeah.
Could blogs be formed in other cities and states? Now, that's outside of the Facebook garbage and the Twitter garbage. Folks, you got to get out of Facebook. It's going to destroy us. Its purpose is to destroy us. You got to get out of it. I know you can never. I joined it for 1 month once, and now I'm a member of it. I can't get out of it. I ever go to Facebook, I get caught. So I never, ever go there. So if you start a blog and everybody goes to a blog and does the same thing, same information, same social media, same everything, but it's a private blog. It's not Facebook, and you do that as a unit. That group is doing it, can do that, and still do what they want. They don't need Facebook.
Yeah. But you know, Doctor, it seems so hard to, or difficult to, I don't want to say retrain, but it's almost like that. You know, people are so into this Facebook and the social networking. It's just amazing. Why not go? You're right. Why not start a blog or a website and have people, direct people there? Yeah.
You can do your own. You don't have to go to Facebook. I know everybody is. And they've created it, and now we've got it habitually. But all you're doing is allowing another agency get control of your life. And you're doing it willingly. You're running there and saying, boy, isn't this fun? I'm going to do this. And another agency with power over you is now taking away your rights.
Exactly.
Are you going to continue to let them do it, or are you going to organize your own? Don't do a social network. Don't do the same thing, just with a new name. But get a thing going for the group that wants it, get it going. They don't have to do Facebook.
Exactly.
If everybody that's being censored by Facebook would say, I ain't going there anymore, they would lose their position.
Yeah, same with Twitter. All Donald Trump has to do is just, President Trump, just move off Twitter, and that would fold like a cheap tin, I believe.
It should. Yep. All he has to do is start a blog of his own, I think. Something like that, and he can say the same information, it doesn't get out quite as fast. But folks, we've got to do things that prevent these people from taking away our lives.
Exactly.
And Facebook doing that. I don't use Google anyway. I don't have a Gmail account. I don't use Google anymore either. They were doing the same thing. I use the DuckDuckGo. I don't use Google anymore. I haven't lost anything. Everything on DuckDuckGo works. I don't use Google. Same reason. Don't do it. Guys, these organizations are using us to destroy ourselves.
It's evil. I like what you said, and we can end with this because we are out of time. But, you know, you said get back to work. How about getting back to church? And
yes.
I thought, how? Yeah, right on. And, of course, you mentioned the scripture, Corinthians. about repentance or Chronicles.
Yeah. Second Chronicles.
About repentance. And how many of us have actually repented like we're supposed to? I say not too many. I would bet. So
can I take just a second here?
Go ahead. We've got 2 minutes.
Okay, repentance doesn't just mean don't do bad things. It means more moving closer to Christ. Move your life closer to Christ. That's what repentance really is. Moving your life closer to Christ. You do that by not doing bad things, but you also do that by just genuinely praying, genuinely being spiritual. Move your life closer to Christ. That's repentance also.
Amen.
Thank you.
Wow. What a great segment. What a great discussion with Dr. Richard Proctor. Sir, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for everything that you're doing for our nation, for waking people up, for having that, having the brave, you're a brave guy. I mean, I got to tell you, you stand up and you say, you know what, I'm not going to take this. And you mean that. And you practice what you preach, and I like it.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't like what I do, go the wrong way in the wrong lines. Yesterday, we got just a second. Yesterday, I went to a store. They had an exit sign. You only exit here and you only enter over there. But I didn't want to go there. So I started through the door, the exit door. The guy says, you can do that. This is an exit door. And what did I say? Yeah, I know. I can see that. Have a good day.
Hey, you can't come in here without a mask. Here's a mask. No, thank you.
Yep, that's right. I'd take the mask and throw it on the floor, put it in the trash, one or the other. I would take it. Oh, yes. Oh, I understand. That's the rule. Then I would throw it away. And from where?
I'm telling you. It's you're right though. We can all make a difference if we all get together and take a stand and make a stand. And that's what we've got to do. And if we can't do it on a national level, then certainly on a more on a local, county, state level, but we have to do that.
Yes, we have to do it.
And I agree with that. Yeah, it's been a pleasure. I'm at the end of the program. It's been a pleasure speaking with you this week and, appreciate that. We're going to be looking more into or citing more of U.S. 18 U.S.C. section 242 as we open the program with. Make sure you know that that color of law. Oh, man, so much to really fight against. My friend, thank you so very much. May God bless May God bless you.
Good to be here. I'm looking forward to next week already.
I am too. I appreciate your time. Folks, I'm out of time. That was Dr. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. ProvisInstitute.com. Get the book, Saving the Constitution. I'm telling you, this has got a lot of great information in it. Bathroom Economics. I didn't mention it when he was on. Bathroom Economics. It's really a cool book. Okay, it really tells a lot of information about the economy and economics, and oh, it's great. But Saving the Constitution. Folks, we need to stand up, stand tall, stand together, and say enough of this crap. That's my view. Don't forget tomorrow, Dr. Michael Lake, Friday, Craig Sawyer. It's going to be a great week. On behalf of my wife, my family, Eric the Tech, and our best furry friends, may God bless each and every one of you. Thank you, and thanks for your belief and trust in us. Good night.